You are here at What's New in ASP.NET and Web Tools for Visual Studio 2013. My name is Daniel Roth. I'm a senior program manager on the ASP.NET team, and I'm super happy to be with you guys here today in New Zealand. It's beautiful. It's lovely here. Now, if the title looks a little different than what you've got on your printed program, that's by design. When the title was originally done, I think it said something like ASP.NET and Web Tools 2013.2. Which at the time was totally accurate. That's exactly what we wanted to talk about. That was the latest, greatest stuff. But we just shipped update 3. And so there's newer stuff, and I really wanted to talk about the newer stuff too, so I had to do a little tweak to the title to account for that. So we will be talking about new stuff in update 2 and update 3 for Visual Studio 2013. Now, if you're interested in learning more about what's happening in ASP.NET vNext, and the new tooling that's coming in Visual Studio 14, which is the code name for the next version of Visual Studio. That stuff's in very early preview, like alpha stages. I have a whole session where I'll be talking about that tomorrow. So we won't be talking about that here today, but if you want to learn more about the future stuff, please stop by tomorrow for my session then, and we'll talk about it. But today we're going to be talking about the stuff that's shipped, the stuff that's available to you now, the stuff that you can put right into production, new stuff, also stuff that's in our playground experimental zones. I want to tell you about the principles that we use for all the things that we're shipping in ASP.NET, the things that drive us, what we're passionate about, how we think about the development of and the improvement of our web stack. First of all, we believe very strongly in web standards, open web standards. We have fantastic support for the latest, greatest web standards, whether you're talking about the whole suite of HTML5 specs, CSS3. We have great support for these things in our tooling, in our editors, and in our runtime. So great support for standards. We believe very strongly in that. We believe very strongly in open source software. This has been a bit of a journey for us. You know, a few years ago, we started this journey where we took the source code for MVC and we stuck it out there on the internet. It was basically just like, you know, copy, paste, put it out there so you at least could look at it. And that was revolutionary at the time. Since then, we've made a lot of progress, come a very long way. All of the web frameworks that we work on in ASP.NET are now all fully open source. And that means that the code is available. You can see up to the minute live what our devs are checking in into our source code repositories, both the ones that are on Coplex, and then we've been moving more and more to GitHub. For managing our code. You can get daily, nightly builds, or even up to the check-in builds of what our devs are doing. A signed build that just appears on a MyGit feed as a NuGet package that you can grab, try it out, see what you think of the latest bits. Maybe there was a bug fix that you really needed, and you can go grab the latest build off of MyGit and try it out and see if that build actually addresses your issue. So the whole project is now open source, and that means also that we are accepting contributions from folks like you guys. A lot of the big features that we did in the last few releases of ASP.NET and Web Tools actually came from the community. Things like attribute routing in MVC and Web API, things like core support in Web API. These were big contributions from the community. We looked at what the community was doing, it looked great, and we just pulled it in. We're also using a lot more third-party open source libraries, which leads very well into the next thing that we believe very strongly in, which is working with the community, not trying to compete with the community or work against it. We believe that we want to have a nice ecosystem around ASP.NET, and we also observe that the community does a lot of amazing, innovative things. Great JavaScript libraries, great .NET libraries and packages. If we see something out there that the community is using that's getting momentum, that a lot of people like, I think maybe in days of yore we might have thought to ourselves, that looks very interesting. Let's build something just like that and see if we can do that too. Well, we're trying not to do that anymore. Instead, we see, there's a lot of people using JSON.NET for JSON, or using jQuery for their JavaScript library. Instead, we just join with the community and say, that looks great, we will support that. And by support that, I mean that we put it into the product. You can call up Microsoft customer support services and ask them questions about jQuery or JSON.NET or all the libraries that we ship. These days with Visual Studio, there are quite a few of them. Knockout, we ship in there. Bootstrap, we're shipping now. And you can get actual support for these products. So we're trying to work more with the community. If we see something that looks good, but it's got some issues, instead of trying to go build another thing, we try to contribute back to the community. We've done that several times with like JSON.NET and the JSON serialization stack. We want to be working with you guys. And lastly, we believe strongly that it should all be so much easier. Don't you think? You know, it's been several decades that I've been working on this web thing, and it's still pretty stinking hard to write a web app, honestly. There's been wonderful progress. Great stuff's been done, but it's still pretty darn hard. And this is not just, you know, talking about our stack. You know, any stack you look at, nobody's got the silver bullet yet on how you can really quickly write web applications. We're working hard on it, though, and we think there's a lot of room for new innovation, new tooling, new runtimes in this space, and that's what we're passionate about. We're going to keep investing heavily in ASP.NET as a web platform and web tooling platform. Now, one of the ways that we're trying to make it easier to build web applications with ASP.NET is this idea of one ASP.NET. We've been talking about it for a little while. If you've worked with ASP.NET in days of yore, it was a bit like, in my mind, it was a bit like driving on the streets of Boston in Massachusetts in the United States. And I don't know how many of you have actually ever been to Boston, but I grew up in Massachusetts. Boston's a relatively old city by United States standards, and the streets there were laid out largely just evolved based on the cow paths. Like where the cows happened to go to get from point A to point B, that's where the streets were laid down. And so you have these terrible intersections where you have like all these streets that come together in this sort of node and then they spread out again. And so if you're driving in Boston, you'll be driving along, you'll come across one of these intersections that has like 5 or 6, 7 different options. And the street signs fly by, you have no idea which lane you're supposed to be in, and you shoot down one of these chutes, you go through some tunnel and under a river, and you're heading north to like Maine or New Hampshire, you have no idea where you are, and you stop and you ask someone, you know, how do I get from where I'm at to where I actually want to go? And they look at you and they say, well, you can't get there from here. You know, that's my really bad Boston accent. I grew up on the west side of Massachusetts, so I don't have a Boston accent. But you just can't get there from here. And that's what ASP.NET was a little bit like for a while, right? Like if you started out with you know, you're building a beautiful web forms app and it's working great, and then you see this MVC thing, and you're like, oh, that looks cool. I'd like to use some of that scaffolding stuff. Can I use that? MVC has its own project GUID and tooling that's tied to that, so you won't get all the tooling over here, and it doesn't really work together. That's what it was like for a while. We're trying to get rid of that. A big release for OneASP.NET was Visual Studio 2013. Where you now had one experience for creating web apps, all the different web flavors of ASP.NET, whether it's sites or services that can be mixed and matched in the same project, all the tooling works in the same projects, you know, there's no more special GUID for MVC apps and so forth. And this applies to stuff that you guys build and use too. You could be talking about, you know, a third-party framework like NancyFX or Service Stack or Fubu MVC. If you want to use these frameworks, that's great, that's fine. We consider them all part of the ASP.NET community, the ecosystem, and you know, we want them to be able to plug into the same story. So that's why we do a lot of work around our tooling to enable third-party extensibility. You can write, for example, third-party ASP.NET scaffolders and plug them right into our tooling, and that works great. All right, so that's one ASP.NET. Now, when are we shipping things? How fast are we shipping things? We ship things about, you know, significant releases about every 6 months. And we've been on that 6-month cadence since about 2012. Of course, the big release, last major release we did, and we do a major release about once every year, was in October of 2013 when we shipped Visual Studio 2013. We then did a significant update for Update 2. A lot of new features came in with Visual Studio 2013 Update 2. We also did ship a bunch of features in Update 3. So that was more like a quarterly release. The updates tend to come out about once a quarter. We tend to snap to the Visual Studio release trains. So we shipped a few more features into Update 3. Now, ASP.NET vNext is what we're working on in the future. That's a much, very large release, longer tail. We expect to be in a preview beta state for ASP.NET vNext, by the end of this year sometime, and then hope to ship that, you know, by the first half of 2015. So a little bit longer tail on that one, but hopefully the extra work will pay off big, and we'll learn more about that tomorrow, right? Okay, now there is also our experimental labs. This is like our playground. This is where we try out new stuff. Like we look out in the community and say, it looks like a lot of people are doing, you know, LESS or SAS or CoffeeScript or, you know, a lot of people are interested in spriting or whatever. And we look at what people are doing. We do a lot of our innovations on our own, and those go into what's called Web Essentials, which is like our research labs, our playground for new features. That ships much faster. It's about once every 2 months or so, and it's an add-on to Visual Visual Studio. It's a V6. You just install it onto Visual Studio, and you get a whole bunch of additional tooling features on top of what you get by default in Visual Studio 2013. It's run by one of my colleagues, Mads Christensen, and he does a lot of really cool work there. So you definitely should check that out. I'm going to be showing you a bunch of features from Web Essentials today. You can get it at vswebessentials.com. So that's sort of our playground. A lot of features graduate from Web Essentials and then make their way into the product. And that's sort of a baking ground for a lot of tooling features. OK, I'm going to go over pretty fast what the features are in Update 2 and Update 3, because I don't want to talk about them very much. I just want to show them to you. OK? So pretty quickly, what happened in Update 2? Well, in Web Forms, we shipped Web Forms scaffolding. This is actually an out-of-band scaffolder that you can install. So you can, just like you can with MVC and Web API, you can start with an Entity Framework model and then scaffold out a bunch of pages that do things like master details views, you know, create, delete, edit, different items. You can now do that with Web Forms as well. So it's again, one ASP.NET. You should be able to do the same things everywhere. We also shipped EF6 data source for Web Forms and the dynamic data provider. So you can use EF6 with your Web Forms controls. In MVC, we updated the scaffolding in MVC to have better support for Bootstrap. We've been using Bootstrap in our templates now for a while. If you don't know what Bootstrap is, it's a set of CSS styles and classes that you can use in your apps to make beautiful looking applications really, really easily. It came out of Twitter, and we said, that looks great. Let's just use it. Our scaffolding in MVC now will pick up the Bootstrap styles, and we also added better support for enums with a new enum dropdown list helper. We added some improvements to attribute routing in both MVC and Web API in Update 2. The improvements there were around being able to create custom attribute routes for doing things like if you want to have a version in the attribute route, like based off of a header, stuff like that. In Web API, we added support for BSON, which is a binary encoding of JSON. It was based on the support that was already available in JSON.NET. The binary encoding of JSON will give you some size improvements and some speed improvements. We also added support for authenticating your Web APIs, configuring authentication for your Web APIs using an on-premise ADFS deployment. We already had support for configuring authentication for Web APIs using Azure AD. Now you can use your on-premise ADFS as well. In SignalR, we added a bunch of new clients, support for Xamarin-based clients, C++, Java, Android. And then ASP.NET Identity. This was a big revamp of the membership system in ASP.NET. We've had membership in ASP.NET for a while. The membership is like your users and their passwords and hashing passwords and making sure they're kept in a safe way so that hopefully hackers can't come in and steal them all. But they sometimes still do, as we've seen in the news quite a bit. So we've been working on some new features for ASP.NET Identity to enable things like two-factor authentication, where instead of just having users log in with just their password, they also have to have a second factor, like a phone that they own the phone number for, or an email account that they own the password for, some other second factor so that stealing that password isn't enough. ASP.NET Identity is a revamped membership system that has support for that, as well as email confirmation was new, password reset, single sign-out, account lockout, and so forth. So pretty cool stuff in ASP.NET Identity. We're using it now in all of our templates across the board for MVC, web forms, and so forth. In EF, the EF Power Tools finally graduated, and you can now also reverse engineer from a database your code first types. And then in Visual Studio, there was a whole slew of new tooling upgrades to the editors, more support for LESS, which is a dialect of CSS that compiles down to CSS, item templates for SAS, which is a similar technology, and editor support for SAS. There's a new JSON editor, also in Visual Studio, which you may or may not have seen. And given the number of JSON formats that are coming out for like managing lists of packages, for configuration, then we think that's becoming more and more important. The phone emulator integration means that it's very easy now to just F5 and see your website in the phone emulator in the browser. So you can see what your site looks like on a mobile device. And then we made it very easy to trust the self-signed certificate that comes with IIS Express. So that's Update 2. A lot of stuff. You're going to see a lot of it in just a minute. So hold on if you're like, wait, what was that? Update 3, a smaller release. Remember, this was just a quarterly release. This wasn't a full 6 months, but there were still some compelling and interesting things that happened. We made it much easier to configure authentication for your sites using Azure AD. You can now just use your Microsoft account when you're logging in as the admin to provision the app's identity in the directory. Before, you had to provision a special account in the Active Directory instance in Azure AD and use that account. Now it's much easier. more attribute routing improvements in MVC and Web API. You notice there's sort of a theme there that, oh man, MVC and Web API, you know, there's a lot that's similar. So lots that should be shared, but because they don't actually share any implementation, like we had to do attribute routing twice, and every feature we do, we have to do the same feature twice. Wouldn't it be nice if they were aligned into a single web stack and they could leverage the same things? You'll find more about that tomorrow, so make sure you come to my talk tomorrow. And also in Web API, we updated the Web API client package to support Windows Phone 8.1, and we shipped support for OData v4. The Web API OData stack had support for OData v3 already, now supports version 4, and actually that has become its own release train, and the OData team has been hard at work continuing to add features to the OData v4 support in Web API. So I think you'll see a lot more momentum in that space. And in Visual Studio, more JSON editor improvements, more CSS editor improvements. We updated all the templates to have the application flows laid out for you for enabling two-factor authentication. I'm going to show you how easy it is to do that today. And then lastly, we added support for Azure Web Jobs publishing. Azure Web Jobs is a way to have a really simple and lightweight worker process. Running in Azure. You know, you have your website and you've got your website's process and it's doing stuff. You want to keep that thing churning. Maybe you get a purchase order in, you want to stuff it into a queue someplace, and then have a worker that's just pulling the messages off the queue. Web Jobs is a very simple and lightweight way to have background services and logic that can be associated with an Azure website or run in its own website. So it's a pretty cool feature, some nice tooling features around that in Visual Studio. Okay. Talk is cheap, though. Let's see some code. Okay, let's see some demos. So we're going to do no more slides, just demos for the rest of the talk. Oh, yeah, no, I don't want to say that. Okay, so first thing, let's talk a little bit about OneASP.NET. So here I have Visual Studio 2013 with Update 3 installed. Now, if you were in like Visual Studio 2012, this is what you would have seen, right? You would have seen a big long list of options, lots of different roads you could go down, and no matter which one you picked, you were wrong. Like it was you just felt terrible whichever one you picked, because it was like, oh, I'm now a web forms guy instead of an MVC developer or whatever. But so no more of that. No more guilty feelings. It's all the same. There's just one kind of web app, and you can do it all. If you want to do web forms, go ahead. So I'm going to create a new web app. It's called ASP.NET Tech Ed New Zealand. Let's just call it that. It should have the ed in tech ed, so I don't get confused. Okay, go. All right, now there's this nice landing place now when you create your web application where you can pick from a set of existing templates, like starting places. So I want to do web UI, or I want to create a back-end web API service. There's even a new template here for creating a back-end web API service that runs in Azure Mobile Services, which is pretty nice. Azure Mobile Services will give you a bunch of runtime features like built-in support for authentication, push notifications, and so forth, that makes writing back-end services for mobile devices really easy. So that's a nice template to have. So these are just starting places, and there are starting places that are sort of biased to different technologies like WebForms versus MVC, but that doesn't mean you're stuck just using that one. Like you'll notice down here at the bottom, there are these checkboxes where you can say, yeah, I want to create a WebForms app, but I also want to have the MVC stuff there as well. That's fine, you know, just check it. If you want to create an MVC app, but I also want to have some Web API in there as well, that's fine, you can do that. And we'll set up the folders and the infrastructure for you so you can do both at the same time. If you want to add it later, no problem. It's not like you made this choice once and you're stuck with it. You can always update it later. So let's do web forms. And I'm going to do a web forms app that actually is going to have some MVC in it as well. You have the ability in this dialog to quickly set up your unit tests and then to change your authentication configuration. This is pretty convenient. You know, wiring up security can be kind of tricky. You have every authentication option you can think of as long as it's one of these four. The first one is no authentication. That's where you want to, you know, live free and, you know, everything is wide open, anonymous. Individual user accounts means that your users' identities are just identities that really have no other association than with your app. They're not part of some other organization. This typically means you're managing your own membership store, usernames, passwords, although you may also have users bring their own social identities to the table, and that's fine too. So the users are part of your app. They're your app's users is the only real concept there. As opposed to organizational accounts, which means that your users are actually part of some organization, like your company, or a particular government body or whatever, or a school, there's typically a directory involved here. Your users are involved, are part of some directory, and that directory could be an on-premise directory, like AD, like sitting inside your company's firewall. It could be a cloud directory, Azure AD. That would be the case if you're like a smaller company and you're using Office 365 for all of your infrastructure and user management. You could even have an app that accepts users from multiple organizations. This would be like a software as a service model, where you want to have like Yammer, where you want to have one app, but you can provision multiple tenants in the app, and you can authenticate users from each of those different organizations. Does that make sense? So that's what that third option is there. Okay, so for this, and then Windows authentication is just classic Windows Auth, good old Windows Auth. All right, I'm going to do individual accounts in this particular demo. And then lastly, down here in the corner, you see I have the ability to host in Azure right from the start, to go ahead and provision resources in Azure, which of course we would love for you to do. It is in fact checked by default. Your options here for hosting in the cloud are two. You can host in an Azure website, which is basically hosted IIS, and you don't really have much control over anything else on the machine. Or you can host in the Azure virtual machine, and we will actually go in and install IIS for you on that virtual machine and set up web deploy so it's ready to go, ready to deploy your apps to it. You can then deploy your app to that VM. You can remote desktop into that VM and install whatever you want, and then it's your responsibility. So Scott Hansman likes to use the analogy of using a VM is kind of like buying your own house, right? Like if you want to paint zebra white and black stripes on the walls, and you want to put red plush carpet on the ground, and you want to knock down some beams, go for it. Like it's your house. Do whatever you like. It's your responsibility. You're responsible for installing Windows updates and all that kind of stuff. If you go with a website, that's more like a hotel room. You come in and it suits a very specific need. You can trash it. You go away. You come back. It's all beautiful again. But someone came in and cleaned it up. That's kind of what a website is like. It's very quick to publish a website. For provisioning a VM, that takes a little longer. For this demo, let's do website. And you'll see I've already set up my Azure subscription here. And click OK. All right, and they're saying, would you like to cut your website? What would you like to call? They're going to create ASP.NET Tech Ed New Zealand. Sounds good. I'm going to use this particular subscription. And I don't know, what's the nearest place? Southeast Asia? Is that the closest one? I think I'll do the Southeast Asia one. I don't need a database for this particular demo, so I'm going to skip that. Okay, and now this is creating my project. It's currently, it's actually installing a bunch of NuGet packages. We use NuGet heavily on the ASP.NET team. NuGet is the easiest way to get some logic into your project. You just install the package. And we have all of our stuff we generally ship as NuGet packages. And when you create the project, we just install the related relevant NuGet packages, like MVC, WebPR, or whatever you happen to be using. Now, down here in the corner, I don't know if you could see that, but it's saying that it's created the website. And now, if you want to, go ahead and publish. So I'm going to go ahead and publish. Yeah, this brings up the publishing wizard immediately, and it's got all the settings that it needs to publish to that particular Azure website. I don't have to change anything. I am going to change one thing. I'm going to change this configuration to a debug configuration for a later demo, so that's all. And that looks good. So let's go ahead and publish. Now, I don't know how many of you have used Azure maybe a while ago. Like a while ago, it took quite a while to actually get up and running in Azure, like to get from 0 to 60. Like I want to create an app and set up a website and publish it up into Azure could take, just setting up the VM in Azure could take like 20, 30 minutes. Like getting from file new project to up and running in Azure, hopefully, if the internet is working for me, will be a fairly simple and painless experience. And I'm just going to wait. It's going, copying all the files up there. And. Man, the Entity Framework is just holding everybody up. Whew. Oh, I hope I didn't just lose my network connection. Let me see. Did I lose it? Yeah, still got a network. Well, I'm gonna let it keep going. because I believe that's just a network issue going on. But while it's doing that, let me tell you about something else that's happening and that happened in this project when it got set up. You'll notice up here in the upper right-hand corner that in addition to that, you know, just use web deploy to publish from your project to get into Azure. Now, there may be still some cowboys and cowgirls in the audience that publish into production directly from your laptops, and that's very exciting. But for publishing to production, you probably want to have a little bit more process involved. And so we actually will go ahead and give you the PowerShell scripts right in the solution that you can use for setting up the website and publishing the bits to that particular website. So that's what you're seeing here. This is the PowerShell script. It's all set up. You'll notice we're also getting syntax highlighting and IntelliSense within Visual Studio for the PowerShell script, so that's pretty nice. And if you do want to run it directly from Visual Studio, you can just right-click, open with PowerShell ISE, and then you can actually run the script right from here. It's all set up and ready to go. And oh man, you're killing me here. You're still not published. Okay, well, what am I going to do here? I'm going to let it keep going. Okay. Maybe what I'll do is pop over to a new VS instance real fast. And I don't want to touch that one. I believe strongly that that will eventually succeed. Okay, so web forms, this, and we're going to skip the hosting a cloud for just a second. Okay. So let me show you a few things about things you can now do within your application. Like I mentioned, scaffolding now, that you can use scaffolding. You've always been able to use scaffolding for MVC, and you've been able to use it for Web API. But Web Forms, you never had it for Web Forms before. So what I'm going to do here is add a model type to this web application. This is a Web Forms application. Let's say add class. Let's call this a product. CS. Okay, let's give it an ID. Let's give it a name. Let's give it a price. Okay, I'm going to build. All right, now I'm going to right-click on the project, say add new scaffolded item. Did you see that? I don't know if you saw that. It was a new scaffolded item. That's your entry point into ASP.NET scaffolding. Now, in the past, you would have seen a bunch of lovely scaffolders for MVC, a bunch of lovely scaffolders for WebAPI. Now we've also got scaffolders for web forms. Now, this is actually an extension. This is something you add into your into Visual Studio. Now, where do you get it? You see this link on the bottom that says click here to go online and find more scaffolding extensions? Let's go ahead and do that. That's going to bring me to the Visual Studio Gallery and pull that. And it's going to filter actually by things that are for scaffolding. And here you'll see a whole bunch of third-party scaffolders that you can actually use in your web applications. And there's the web form scaffolding V6 right there. So I went ahead and installed that. But you can add your own scaffolders and grab third-party ones there as well. So let's go ahead and run this. I want to run the web forms scaffolder. Okay. And my model type was the product. And I don't have a data context that I want to use, so I'm going to create a new one. And that looks good. And that looks like a perfectly good context name. Did it come up? Wait. Come back. It says it's done, finished publishing. Ah, there it is. Oh, thank goodness. Okay, so there's running on Azure. It's really fast, super fast. this is just a normal web forms app, right? You can log in, you can register. We'll get back to the scaffolding in just a second. There's a couple of things I want to show you here. And I'm going to try and publish again, and hopefully the second time it will go a lot quicker. Okay, so if I go back to that original app, just because I want to show you a couple things you can do with Azure that are pretty cool. One thing, if you're working with Azure, you're probably going to ask, like, how do I do troubleshooting and diagnostics up in Azure? You know, it's somewhere over in Southeast Asia or wherever you happen to put your website. So one thing you can do, I'm going to use just system diagnostics tracing. Trace warning. Let's trace a warning. And let's do, I don't know, the time is date time dot now. Okay? Let's save that, build, make sure it's building, okay, and then I'm going to republish. We'll see if that was going to work for me. Okay, and then while that's publishing, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go over here to the Server Explorer. If you're dealing with Azure, you could go over to the Azure portal and fiddle with a bunch of stuff. Oh, it's coming up much faster now. Okay, good. So whatever that was happened before, I don't know. It was a little blip. But in the Server Explorer, you can see all of your Azure resources, like your websites, your VMs, your cloud services, your mobile services, and so forth. Okay, now I should be able to see here someplace. Let me refresh. My new ASP.NET TechEd New Zealand site. There it is, okay? I'm gonna right click on it and I'm gonna change its settings, view settings. I'm gonna make a little tweak here. And you'll see here it says application logging. I don't know if it's really teeny tiny, I'm sorry, the font I guess there doesn't increase. But it says application logging and I'm gonna turn this on. I'm gonna turn it on to the warning level. And then save that up into Azure. And what this is going to enable me to do is, because I've turned on application logging, Azure will now take all the output from System Diagnostics and save it. And then in Visual Studio, you have the ability to now stream that down to your Visual Studio instance. So if I right-click on that Azure website and say, View Streaming Logs, I'm going to get this little window down here. And this is like your console out for stuff that you're doing in Azure. Now let me go back to the site. And I'm going to go to that about page that I was messing with. And there it is. You see, that's how it's updating. It's saying the time is now sometime later, you know, September 10th. Every time I click, I'm getting a new trace output. Okay? So that's how you can do like console write line style debugging in Azure. I'm going to try one more thing, see if this works. That we can do better. And on a great network connection, this I'm sure would be super seamless. We're going to set a breakpoint right here. On this web application. And I'm going to go right click and attach debugger. Now, this first time, it does take a little while to set up the debugger. But what it's going to do is it's going to go to that website. It's going to set up the remote debugger on that website. If you have just one instance, it'll do it just for that instance. If you have a cluster, it'll pick a random one. But it's doing it a very clever way to make sure that it's isolated from all the other websites that are being hosted on Azure, so you can only debug into your app and not poke around and see what other people are doing. Now, after you do it the first time, all that infrastructure gets set up, and you don't have to do it again. And so it's much faster the second and third time that you decide to attach the debugger. But because this is a new site, took a few seconds there, but it's already done. Here comes the site. And the site is currently in the middle of a snowy white blizzard. Well, that's why you can't see any of it yet. Come on. Attaching the debugger, scrambling some bits, and unscrambling some bits. Ah, there it is. Now, why is it? Oh, it's which page? Oh, I put it on the about page. I wonder why it's already hitting when I haven't even hit the about page yet. But you can see, like, this is actually now running in Azure, and I can get full. Like, let me continue this just because I'm not. That was a little interesting. That's hitting again. Is someone hitting my site? Who's hitting my site? That's fantastic. Okay. Thank you for your assistance in that demo. So it's working. It's working. All right. So that's remote debugging in Azure. Thank you. Okay. Let me close all this down. All right. Let me go back to web application too. So we scaffolded paging back in. We had created a model, a product type, and we scaffolded out a bunch of web forms pages for this web application. And you can see it here. Like, here's all the pages that got scaffolded. We have a default view, delete, details, edit, insert, and so forth. Okay? So that's web form scaffolding. Let's run it and see what it looks like. This is just going to run locally. And let's go ahead and browse to that products page. All right. Create new. So here we have, you know, scaffolded pages. I'm going to add a product, one of my favorite products in the whole wide world, Surface Pro 3, and price. You know, I've got to get the i7, right? So, you know, it's going to be like, what, 200, I don't know, just like something like that in New Zealand dollars. So insert that, and there it is. So that's scaffolded web forms. Now, if we go back and look at that form, and let me add another product that I've always desired, like a Tesla Roadster. Yeah. Okay, and now if I type some random stuff in here, I do get validation. And if we go digging in the browser debugger to see what's actually happening there on that element, you'll see that the on the input up here, the type equals number is actually specified correctly using HTML5 validation attributes. So this is actually the browser that's validating to make sure that the text that you're typing really is a number. So support for web standards, good thing. Okay. So that's web forms. But remember, I said I wanted to do web forms and MVC, you know, show that we really can do one ASP.NET. Let me add another class. Let's call this one a to-do item. Let's see. Yes. Okay, this one's going to be a little bit different. It's going to have int ID, and let's give it a string title, and give it a to-do item status. Okay, it's the status of this to-do item. It's going to have multiple potential states. All right, so to-do enum. All right. Okay, and let me put a little display attribute here just so it shows up nicely when we look at it. Not started. So not started. Started and done. Make sense? So that's our little to-do item. Let's build that. I'm going to go to the controllers folder, which was nicely set up for us when we created the project, because we checked the MVC checkbox. Add scaffolded item. And go to MVC. And I'm going to do an MVC controller using EF, this one. OK. And let's do to-do item. And let's reuse our data context that we created previously. No, not that one. That's the identity one. This one. All right, everything else looks good, and let's add that. So this is going to scaffold out an MVC controller, which is, you know, it's been around for a little while, but there are a couple things that we've done differently. Let me run this. Now what's going to happen here? Run this. Oh, yellow screen of something or other. What is this? It says the model backing the context has changed since the database was created. Oh, that's right. So I had started with a context. I had added a set of products to it. So the database got set up with a certain schema. And then I changed it. And so EF is looking at the database and is being like, whoa, hold on. That database has already got some schema in it. Like, you can't just, what do you want me to do? So to fix that, we can use a feature of EF called database migrations. It's pretty, very easy to use, actually. I'm going to open the package manager console, NuGet package manager console. And I'm going to run enable migrations. And I have to specify a couple options here. I want to use automatic migrations, which is going to allow me to, if you don't do automatic migrations, then every time you set up a migration for moving the database from one state to another, EF will actually spit out a bunch of code. It'll scaffold a bunch of code for running that migration explicitly in your project. For simple migrations, you don't really need that code, so that's what automatic migrations are. If you're just like adding a table, then that can just be handled without having to scaffold out the code. And because I have two context types, in my project, I need to something specify it. Is that right? I think I have two context types. Yeah, so let me do the context type that I want to migrate, which is this first one. Nope, this second one. Fix that right there. Okay, so that's going to set up migrations for the project. All right, and then I'm going to just update the database. So pretty easy. Don't even need to, if you're doing the not automatic migrations, then you'd have to say add migration, and then it would scaffold out a migration for you before you ran it. But because I'm using automatic, it just works. Okay, so now it should be fine, right? Let's try it now. Oh, yeah. Ignore that. Ignore that for a second. Oh, no. I just closed Visual Studio. Ninja music for a second. Yes, feel free to use that. And the little tiny bug that I got to fix. Okay. That didn't happen. You never saw that. Okay. All right. Woo-hoo. So there's MVC, web forms all working happily together. Now I'm gonna create a new to-do item. When I do that, you'll notice that MVC is now picking up all the bootstrap styles, right? And you notice that the enum now actually has a nice dropdown, which is cool, as opposed to just being a string text box like it would have been in like previous versions of MVC. And that's because if we actually go look at the scaffolded code, like to-do items create, you'll see that there's all the bootstrap styles and classes being actually added in the scaffolded code, which is great. And then here's the new enum dropdown list for helper that we're using for handling enums. Okay, so that just happens magically for you using MVC scaffolding. All right, cool. Now, the next thing I wanted to show you, and I'm going to close this one and go back to the other one, is web jobs. So another thing you might want to do in your web app is you might want to have some background work, like you get something in the queue, and you pop it off and do some work. And there's a great feature in Azure called web jobs that you can do for that. And they're really easy and lightweight to create. It's actually as simple as creating a console project. All right, so I'm going to add a new project to this solution. Add project. I'm going to the cloud node and say I want to create a Microsoft Azure web job. Web job one sounds lovely. Okay, and you'll notice that it literally is a console application. It's got a static void main in it. Okay, I'm going to add a little bit of code here just to prove that it really is just a console app. While true, and let's do console.writeLine. The count is, okay, and then let's sleep the thread. So system.threading.thread.sleep for, say, 2 seconds, and then we'll count again, okay? Now, there's a little web job. Now, I can deploy this web job into Azure in its own website. And that's kind of nice, because then you can scale it independently of the rest of your web application. You can also associate a web job with an existing Azure website, in which case that web job, the process for it is actually going to run on the same image as your website. So they'll scale together. For simple cases, that may be fine. If you want to put it into its own website, there's this nice publish as Azure web job option right there in Visual Studio. That's pretty cool. For my case, I'm going to just do the simple thing and put it in the same website that I've already created. To do that, right-click on the project and say, add existing project as Azure web job. Okay? When you do that, it's going to give you this nice dialog that says, well, what's the web job you want to add to this website? Web job one. And then you have these three options for running your web job. Your web job can run continuously, like it's just always sitting there waiting for a queued message or doing some work in the background. It can run on a schedule, in which case you can set up some regular schedule that this thing runs, like a cleanup task. Or it can run on demand, where it's, that basically says, I have to push a button somewhere in the portal to get this web job to run. So I'm going to do continuously for this guy. That'll be fine. This is going to add a package to the website so that it can be published together with the website. And then let's go ahead and publish it. So this is not only going to publish the website, it's also going to publish up that Azure web job with it. Okay. Now while that it's publishing, I'm going to go back to the portal. And now here in the Server Explorer, I can just select the website for that app, right-click and say open in management portal. Because this is one feature that we don't actually have. There's the website coming up. First-class support for in Visual Studio for like viewing your web jobs and such. So I'm going to go into the portal. All right, so here's my website, ASP.NET Tech Ed New Zealand. And you'll notice that there's a web jobs tab. I wish I could. How about that? Is that a little better? So we see there's a web jobs tab. It's in preview. When I click that, this will actually show me all the web jobs that are associated with this website and what mode they run in. And there's even some additional diagnostic pages that you can take a look at so you can see like the output from the web job, or is it, how many times has it run, is it failed, and so forth. I'll just give this a second to load. Just a second. Okay, there it is. So you see, there's my web job one that I just published up to this Azure website. This is a brand new website. It says that it's running. It runs continuously. If I click on this logs page, this will give me a site extension page. It'll let me look deeper into that web job and actually see, you know, what is it doing, how many times has it been run, and so forth. I'm going to let that pop up real fast. Now, this is obviously kind of a toy web job, right? All this is doing is, you know, as burning electrons, right? It's just spinning in Azure, like counting. So there it is. So I can even see the console output in this helper page. If I refresh, you know, there's 30, 31, and so forth. So it's just sitting there, counting happily, spewing out to the console. No reason to waste those electrons. So I'm going to go ahead and stop it in Azure, and you have a, you know, a control over the web jobs directly within the portal. Now, that was a toy web job. Like here I have a different app. This is a web app and with a couple web jobs that go along with it, one in particular that does some complicated, advanced image processing, okay? So what you can do with this app is you can upload a set of images. Here's a bunch of images of, this is me climbing a mountain in Washington called Mount Shuckson. That's just a gorgeous place, these beautiful glaciers climbing up to the peak. So you upload a bunch of images and it puts it into blob storage. And then it, the web application then puts a message in the queue and says, all right, there's a bunch of images that need to be batched processed. And there's a web job that sits there and waits for that notification. Now, when you're waiting for that notification, you could just use the Azure SDK directly and interact with the queue using the normal API to see is there a message in the queue and pop it off and so forth. But there's a nice web jobs SDK that you can use. It's a NuGet package where you can basically just write a class that has some static methods on it. And then you can annotate a method and say that this method should run as a response to a trigger, like a message arriving in a queue or something arriving in a particular blob storage collection and so forth. If we look at the code for this app is called Fluffy Shuffy. It's a very, very sophisticated and elaborate app. Let me go show you the code for this guy really fast. So this app has these four projects. The bottom one is just a helper library for dealing with blob storage and the queues. This is the web app, okay? And all it's doing is taking the file uploads and sticking them into blob storage using that helper library in the bottom. But here's the web job that's using the web jobs SDK. And again, it's just a console app, but it's using that SDK and to turn on the features of the SDK in your static void main, you just call job host, create a new job host, and call run and block. And that will handle then discovery of the logic that you want to run as part of your web job. And like I said, it basically looks for public static methods on public classes. All right? And then here's the actual web job. It's this one method. And the web job SDK gives you these nice annotations where you can annotate parts of your method and say, this method should run when a message arrives in a queue. And this is the queue that I want you to listen on. And so whenever a message arrives in the queue, this method gets evoked. And in this particular case, it will then go to the look in the message and figure out what images to go pick up from blob storage, process them, and then save the process image onto the back onto blob storage. So okay, let's go ahead and run it. And how fast is it going to happen? Okay, so let me refresh. So here is the diagnostics page for Fluffy Shuffy's web job. Oh, it's already processed, so I missed it. But let's see if we can actually see that actually happened. But you can see it like 11 seconds ago, 13 seconds ago now, it found a message in the queue and went and got all the blob images and processed them. So there's that complicated advanced image processing, you know, create like a deck of cards. Okay, so that's web jobs. So you can quickly create web jobs in Visual Studio. You can associate them with websites. You can very easily publish them. And then you can use the web jobs SDK to very easily code them to respond to things like messages in Azure queues, blob storage, table storage, and so forth. All right. Let's talk about identity. This one. Okay. So we talked a little bit about ASP.NET Identity. It's our revamped membership framework, and it has a bunch of really awesome new features. So this particular app is basically the default MVC template. The MVC template has some code that's commented out if you want to enable things like two-factor auth and email confirmation and so forth. And I've gone through and already wired those things up. Okay, that's what this app is all about. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to register a new user. Danroth28@hotmail.com. And the username in this case is an email address. Now, if you're going to do email addresses for your usernames, make that a little bigger, You probably want to confirm them first, that the user actually owns that email address. Otherwise, you get into situations where someone can register someone else's email address and then pretend to be them, essentially, which is not great. So I'm going to register a new user using my email address that I own and say register. And it's going to walk me into a flow where it says, OK, yep, you can create that user, but you first need to confirm your email account. Now, I think I have my email account already up. And lo and behold, at 5:44 PM, let's see, minus 5 plus a day, I think, or something like that, is New Zealand time to US time, is the email that I just received to confirm my account. And so let's go ahead and click that. And it says, thank you for confirming your email. Go ahead and log in. And now I can log in to this account. Oh, I don't remember what password did I use? That's the right password. OK, great. With that, I could quickly use the forgot my password feature. All right, so that's email confirmation. That's wired up into ASP.NET Identity. You can use ASP.NET Identity to create the codes that are being validated there. There's a code that's getting embedded into that link. And then on the server, it's validating that the person it issued that code to is the one that's confirming the email. OK, does that make sense? So wiring that up in code is very, very simple. If we go look at the register method on the account controller, this is where you're actually registering a new user. And here's the call where it's actually creating that URL for the email. If we go look at how it does that, it's using ASP.NET Identity and the user manager to generate an email confirmation token for that specific user and that email address that it then validates later. Okay. So now for sending the email, you have to do that yourself. Like, there's no like magic email sending that just comes with ASP.NET Identity. In this case, you implement this email service class. In this particular app, I'm using SendGrid, which is a pretty nice third-party service that you can get from the Azure Store. So I encourage you to go try that out. They have a nice service. It's free trial and a nice NuGet class library that you can use in .NET apps. So this is using SendGrid to actually then send email. All right, that was cool. Now, when I go into the manage this user, I can see things like change my password. I can manage things like social logins if I have enabled social logins in this app. I can also confirm a phone number for this app. And that would be useful for like two-factor authentication. So I'm going to add a phone number to my profile. And this is my real phone number, really. This is it. Okay. Let's submit that. So there's a little, obfuscation happening here. Now, if that worked, then the way this is going to send me a text message, and it did. Let me show that. Hold on. So I just got a text message. In this case, it's actually using Twilio. I used Twilio, a free trial from Twilio, to send the text message, and it says that the code is 829416. Is that right? Yes. Good. Whew. That's my fallback in case cell phone coverage fails me. 829416. Submit. Okay, so now I have a confirmed phone number. And now I'm going to enable two-factor authentication. And I have a couple options now for two-factor authentication in this app. I could either use the email again, like I could ask it to send an email to my email account that I then get the code from there, or I could use my phone. So let me log in. That's password. Okay, and I have two options, phone code or email code. Let's go use the phone code. Let's see, I should get another text. There it is, it just popped up. And it says 875860. And shouldn't that be log in now? Okay. So that's two-factor authentication in ASP.NET Identity. That's available right there in the templates. Just file a new project, and you can get going with it. For sending emails, SendGrid is nice. For sending text messages, like you saw here, using Twilio, there's a bunch of other services you could use. You could use like an authenticator app if you wanted to, like Microsoft's authenticator app as your second factor as well. All right. I'm kind of short on time, but other cool things like if you forgot your password, you can have very easily set up a flow now where you can reset your password using an email flow. If you try and log in too many times and fail, we'll automatically lock out accounts. All those things are configured inside the template app. So lots of great stuff in the ASP.NET Identity space. Okay. Now let's go to the playground. Let's try some of the new fancy fun features that are that we've been experimenting with. All right, this is just a default MVC app. And I've installed in Visual Studio Web Essentials. Remember, I talked about that before, right? That's like where we do our experiments. It ships about every 2 months. Lots of innovations that happen in Web Essentials that eventually make their way into Visual Studio. All right, so let's go ahead and run this app. And this is just the default MVC template. I'm going to put these guys side by side. And the background looks all weird, and I'll explain that in a minute. Okay, now if I look down here in the bottom, you notice that Web Essentials has put a little control bar at the bottom. And there's this nice inspect feature. Like, have you ever had that problem where you're looking at your website, and you're like, where did that thing come from? Like, is it from the layout? Is it from the index? You notice on the left that it's actually updating? You see that? Like, if I go up here, there's the application name is actually coming from layout. We go down to the page, that's coming from index.cshtml. So you can jump right to the spot in the code where those things have been updated, okay? The background color is driving me nuts. Let me fix that real fast. Let's fix this. Okay. Ah, thank you. Okay. Now, so that's inspect. Now let me also open up an impartial third-party browser. Okay. And I'm going to also browse to the site in that browser. Now, you see this little icon here that looks like a refresh icon? Now, you'll notice now that it says that there are two browsers connected. If I knew how to do the zoomy thing, I would do the zoomy thing. And you would see that it says Internet Explorer and Chrome are both connected to Visual Studio. And that means I can do things like if I change the code, ASP.NET is cool, save, and hit the little refresh button, notice that both browsers refreshed. Like you could have, you know, Chrome, IE, Opera, whatever, all open and connected to Visual Studio. You change things, hit one button, and refresh all the browsers. And that's kind of nice to make sure it actually looks the same in all the browsers. Does that make sense? Okay, that's kind of cool. But there's even something wilder here. Like you see this design button at the bottom? If I click that, wouldn't it be nice if instead of having actually go to Visual Studio, if I could just edit like right in the browser and see the changes. You see the change? Like really, really cool. And if I undo, the whole undo buffer is actually preserved here. Like I'm just undoing and then redoing just like I would have done if I had typed real text, okay? And then, of course, we want to refresh and make sure everybody is really, really cool, okay? So that's nice. And this last demo I'm gonna do within Chrome, have you ever done that thing where, I'm not a CSS guy, I'm terrible with CSS, but for people that are, that they twiddle with the F12 tools and they get it to look exactly the way they want it, and then when it's done, they're like, perfect, okay, now don't move, and you go back to your site and you update your CSS, you try and figure out how do I reverse, what was just done there, like, that's okay, but wouldn't it be nice if you could do something like background color, I could spell blue, black. You see it updating over on the left, purple. Isn't that nice? Another thing that's really cool is you can even go and use this color selector here. And if you drop down here, there's this, see this little guy? You probably can't see it, but Scott Hansman likes to call this a little mini Legend of Zelda sword here in the corner. You click on that, and then you can pick from any of the wonderful color palette of Visual Studio. You can pick gray or slightly darker gray, and yeah, that looks great. That's great. Save that, refresh in all browsers, and we're good to go. Okay, so that's called Browser Link. A lot of really neat stuff there in Browser Link. There's other cool stuff in in Web Essentials that I wish I could show you, like Zen coding and images support, but we're short on time, and I know I don't want to be between a bunch of hungry developers and lunch. But I do want to show you one more thing. So this is really new. Like this is so new that please don't breathe too hard because my Visual Studio will crash and burn. Okay, so maybe we have some front end developers in the crowd, like people who are doing a lot of JavaScript. Dealing with things like JS, linting, for JavaScript. Maybe you're using With JavaScript libraries, it used to be you had to go to a website and download the JavaScript library and get into your project. You don't do that anymore, right? Because there's all these wonderful package managers out there. And I wish I could say that the package manager was, it's NuGet. And to orchestrate, doing dev time things with your JavaScript, you use MS Build. But the fact of the matter is, that's not really how people do things. A lot of the JavaScript libraries are up on the Node package manager, like NPM, or they're on Bower, which is an NPM-based package manager specifically for front-end development. For orchestrating tasks like minification and bundling and spriting and all that kind of good stuff, a lot of people are using Grunt or Gulp, these types of libraries. And if you're not using those, it's fine. Don't feel bad. But for the people that are and those things are interesting, typically your experience for dealing with those guys, you go to the command line, Node command line, and you npm install or init something, and you set up a package.json file, which is what this little website has here. And you set up your dependencies, and you go back to npm, and you restore them or whatever. But wouldn't it be nice for those who are doing front-end development, this has already got all the npm packages installed. I'm just going to delete those. If you could do some things right-click, install packages from right within Visual Studio. And then if I refresh, I could see all the packages got restored. Wouldn't it be nice if, when you're editing this file from within Visual Studio, you could get, full IntelliSense over that file right within Visual Studio? This is the new JSON editor that you're seeing here that's picking up the schema for the package, that JSON file used by NPM, the Node Package Manager. And even things like I want to use jQuery. You see there's a little pop-up thing that happened there? Come back here. All right, I want to use jQuery. That looks good. And, what's going on? And I want to pick a specific version of jQuery and so forth. So you're getting IntelliSense even searching over the NPM package source. Wouldn't that be cool? These packages here, I've installed Grunt, which is this framework for orchestrating dev tasks. What if I could just hover over these things and figure out what they are? Oh, that's Grunt. And I hover a little longer, I can see what the license is and who wrote it and so forth. That would be cool. Now, for actually running Grunt tasks, I have a Grunt file in this project. It has things like less compilation, CSS minification, bundling, and so forth. Wouldn't it be cool if you could right-click and do grunt, I want to run JS hint, and I can see the output, and that's kind of nice. But even more recently, we published a preview experiment where what if you could do right-click task runner explorer, and then what this lets you see is all the tasks that are in your grunt file. They're here on the left, and then you can also coordinate those tasks with your MS build. After build, I want to run something over all my JavaScript files, run JavaScript lint or whatever. You can do that here. Does that make sense? So I can from right here, I can run JS hint, and that's just going to do the normal console thing, and it's got some output there. But notice that in the error list, it's actually picking up the errors that are showing up from the output of running JS hint, and I can jump to that and say, yeah, I'm missing a semicolon there in my JavaScript file, okay? And it even was picking up the aliased tasks. These are build and default were two tasks that were basically a set of tasks that were set up in the grunt file, and I can run those as well, coordinate those with my build. That's called the Task Runner Explorer. It's a V6 extension that you can get today. If you like it, give it a try. There's a wonderful blog post that Scott Hansman put together about this new feature. And we expect to do a lot more in this space of making front-end development and server-side development mesh well together. You can read all about it here, figure out how to get the bits, because it's public. You can just go ahead and get it right now. So that's support for NPM, Grunt, Gulp, and Bower from Vim Visual Studio that we're putting out in preview. So please go give that a try. All right, and that's the end of the playground set of demos. And I know lunch is right here. So just the last few words, ASP.NET. Open web standards, we believe strongly in those. Open source, everything you've seen me do is open source. We're working with the community. We're not trying to rebuild everything. We're trying to contribute back, use stuff that people are already using, use the tools that you want to use, and make web development easier than it's ever been before. Like I said, this was just the stuff that we have shipped and is stable and is available now. To learn all about ASP.NET vNext and Visual Studio 14, come to my talk tomorrow, and I'll tell you about that as well. Thank you so much for coming. It was great seeing you all.